episode is sponsored by Mint Mobile. Are you someone that likes having money? Unfortunately, traditional big wireless carriers also like having your money too. So if you're tired of spending hundreds on crazy high wireless bills, bogus fees, and quote-unquote free perks that cost you more in the long run, then a premium wireless plan from Mint Mobile for $15 a month might be right for you. You could be saving so much money every month to put into savings or for a big trip, so stop wasting it. Stop overpaying for wireless just because that's how it's always been. Mint exists purely to fix that. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Bring your own phone and phone number, activate with an eSIM in minutes, and start saving immediately. No long-term contracts, no hassle. Ditch overpriced wireless and get 3 months of premium wireless service from Mint Mobile for $15 a month. If you like your money, Mint Mobile is for you. Shop plans at mintmobile.com/broski. That's mintmobile.com/broski. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month 5 gigabyte plan required. Equivalent to $15 a month. New customer offer for first 3 months only, then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
Direct from the Broski Nation headquarters in Los Angeles, California, this is the Broski Report with your host, Brittany Broski.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm trying to think. I can check in the back, but any waistcoats we would carry would be from an extra small to a medium. Yeah, brother, I'm sorry. What's that? Excuse me. You know, I think those were a limited edition drop, so I don't know what to tell you, brother. I mean, like I said, I can go check in the back, but pickings are kind of slim. You missed the craze of it. So, yeah, we might have those diamond-encrusted pocket watches, but, I mean, that was a collaboration with the show, so, yeah, dude. Here, give me a second. I'll go check in the back. I'll be right back. Hey, man, not looking good. I checked in the back. Bad news, good news. What do you want first? Bad news, good news. All right, bad news. All of our waistcoats are in an extra small, extra, extra small. All right, not looking good. They don't really offer plus size in the waistcoats. Great news. I did find limited edition Nosferatu Funko Pop. All right, they were very, very rare around the time that they were released. We also carry the Nosferatu fragrance. So I could bundle those for you, get you 10% discount if you open a credit card with us today. You want to do that? All right, great. All right, dude, I'll get you over here at this register. Hey, guys, welcome back. I feel like last week we talked a lot about Eggers because I watched The Lighthouse. This week, I'm feeling inquisitive, all right? I'm feeling like I'm opening, you know, I opened my own emporium, my own store full of, you know, archival fan base stuff. So this is a new character I'm working on. He runs the front of my emporium, my fan emporium that I'm opening soon. And he is aware that he can't grow facial hair, so it's a strap-on beard. It's mutton. It's not exactly like it's a chin strap. It's a chin strap that's grown a lot, but he is physically incapable of growing a mustache due to malnourishment. So it's just kind of a lot, and he tries to hide the hair loss with dyeing it blue, which ultimately kind of highlights it. So he's an interesting character. I can't wait for you guys to meet him, you know, later on when he's a bit more developed. But yeah, you know, because in the Fan Emporium store, there's one section that's like clothing, right? If you need anything steampunk, if you need anything period piece, if you need corsets, if you need those high heels that men used to wear in Napoleon times with the buckle on it, we carry that. But unfortunately, all of it is from Temu, so it runs incredibly small, incredibly small. And it is going to run you up about, you know, anywhere from $250 to $300. per pair of shoes, per corset, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we're running on a limited inventory over here, but ultimately, if you want it, you want it. So that's kind of what keeps the lights on here. You know, I do a good job of sorting everything and kind of, you know I can tell you, quiz me. I can tell you where anything is in this store right now. If you were to ask me, where's the Mandalorian Funko Pop? Right there. Okay. We have a whole section for Star Wars Funko Pops actually, but they've all been taken out of the box and I chew on them. They've been chewed on. So if you don't mind the chew marks, they are incredibly rare. They're rare finds. And honestly, the chew marks make it a bit more valuable because you can tell that it's been well-loved, well-played with. So, you know, that's something they don't really talk about with Funko Pops is like, if you can tell they've been played with a lot, you would also want to play with them too. So shiny and new is out, used and loved is in. And that's just kind of something for 2026, okay? This character needs to link up with the, you know, the girl who does the tour guide of the historic homes where she's like, don't touch that, please. Thank you. Try not. No, guys, come here. So this railing, so hold your questions to the end. So this railing was the original railing that the family would have used when they lived here. Please don't lean on the wall. Thank you. Before we go upstairs, I want you to put yourself in their mindset of going up and down the stairs every day. So, sir, please don't touch that. If everyone's ready, follow me upstairs.
I love her. She does that and she does the nonprofit boss, which makes me fucking laugh, where they're like, can I get Christmas Day off? And they're like,
I appreciate you asking me, you know, because asking is an important part of what we do here. You know, you can't, a closed mouth will never be fed. So I appreciate that kind of dialogue. However, we do need Christmas to be asked off 6 to 7 months ahead of time. So unfortunately, it is not approved. But we will be having some fun Christmas cookies later in the office if everyone will pitch in $35.
I love her. She also does the antique store owner. Like, she nails the baddie old, out of touch, low key, passive aggressive, but like presents as kind person so good. I don't know how she does it. And the wigs, fantastic. All right. They take shifts at my emporium. So this guy works there and he's kind of the brains behind the operation. You know, you can talk to him for hours and hours about Arcane. You can talk to him about K-pop Demon Hunters. But at the same time, he has a deep appreciation for things like Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe and Star Wars. And he did have kind of a period where he was into the three big monsters of like Dracula, werewolf, Frankenstein, like he was doing all that, but that's kind of more, you know, he's got to stay up with what the kids are liking. So yeah, this, you know, I'm developing this character and you'll be seeing him soon. Maybe next time you'll see him, he'll have shaved the beard, but you know, ultimately, I'm experiencing gender euphoria right now with this kind of, this duo. Okay. So we have a lot to get to today, guys. I'm feeling very inquisitive today. I'm also feeling very fan forward. You know, I'm feeling very fan forward. I've been just fiending. You remember that TikTok? Elvis spotted at the Playboy Cardi concert.
Fiend. Oh, mama, fiend.
All right. We're going to look up
all those fucking TikToks. Mama, they turned me into a Playboy Cardi song, mama.
What the fuck was I just about to look up, dude? Don't piss me off. Oh, is it fiend or fiending?
Fiend.
Fiending or fiending. It's both. Refers to an intense, urgent, and often desperate craving or desire for something. Most commonly drugs, alcohol, or nicotine. Well, it applies in what I'm about to describe as Peter Claffey. but not. Okay. There's something to be said about I'm pushing 30. Okay. I turned 29 in a month. Oh my God. Tara season's coming. I have to shave my beard for the occasion. Tara season is coming. You bitches. It's been everybody else's turn. I'm about sick of hearing about everybody's turn. Oh, Capricorn season. Oh, Aries this. It is Taurus time. Everybody comment Taurus time. It's Taurus time. Guys, TT love. Comment TT love. I can't wait for Taurus season. I'm going to feel so connected with my power. So many things have happened this year, and it's all good things. But at the same time, the world is crumbling, right? The world is kind of crumbling in front of us. So how do you kind of be a force for good and also keep your wits about you? And is that an impossible task, right? Right? Stay with me. So I feel like 2026 is, I've never been more in tune with like, all right, universe, I am asking you for the best that you have to offer, and I'm open to it, and I am patient, and I am waiting to receive it. Like, I really do believe, and I went to this woo-woo shop in Pasadena. Actually, shout out to this woman. I really don't, I don't know her name, but we've connected in a very spiritual way. There is a Pasadena antique mall, and it's very huge, very large. It's like the antique mall and annex. And in this little complex, there's a tarot woo-woo spirit shop. Well, you know, I have to pop in there every time I'm in Pasadena. And I popped in there. I went there probably about like a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago. And I got some crystals for meditating. And then this time I was like, now I'm into tarot and I'm familiar with tarot. It doesn't scare me. And so I went to go get my own tarot cards. And I found these two really cool decks. One, I just got the original, you know, art, the recognizable tarot deck art. Then I got, what is it called? It's like Hollywood monsters. That's kind of the theme of it. All the universal monsters. It was Dracula, Frankenstein, werewolf, and like some other ones, like Creature from the Black Lagoon, stuff like that. Bitch, it is so cool. All the cards are themed like it. So I got those two. I had to go in and pay my woman a visit. She is a character. The woman who owns and runs that shop, she is very, very woo-woo. She does tarot readings. She can help you find whatever you need in terms of like, you know, has someone put a spell on you? Oh, the last time I went, I think I was with Tato. And we went in because we were convinced that someone had put a spell. Someone put a curse on Tato. She was fully convinced. And so we went in there and we were like, what you got, girl? And the lady was like, I got some stuff. And so we got her all sorted out. But it was one of those like, no problem is too strange for this woman. And I deeply appreciate that, you know, because life can throw curveballs at you. And sometimes you have to turn to the woo-woo. So she went in there. She helped us out. I got my little monster tarot cards. I'm very excited about that. And then, yeah, I brought those home and I'm very excited. What the fuck was I talking about? This episode is sponsored by Mint Mobile. Are you someone that likes having money? Unfortunately, traditional big wireless carriers also like having your money too. So if you're tired of spending hundreds on crazy high wireless bills, bogus fees, and quote-unquote free perks that cost you more in the long run, then a premium wireless plan from Mint Mobile for $15 a month might be right for you. You could be saving so much money every month to put into savings or for a big trip, so stop wasting it. Stop overpaying for wireless just because that's how it's always been. Mint exists purely to fix that. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Bring your own phone and phone number, activate with an eSIM in minutes, and start saving immediately. No long-term contracts, no hassle. Ditch overpriced wireless and get 3 months of premium wireless service from Mint Mobile for $15 a month. If you like your money, Mint Mobile is for you. Shop plans at mintmobile.com/broski. That's mintmobile.com/broski. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month 5 gigabyte plan required. Equivalent to $15 a month. New customer offer for first 3 months only, then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details. Let's go back. It's Taurus season. I am approaching 30. And honest to God, I could not be more ready. Like I felt 30 for a while. physically, but mentally, I finally no longer feel like a 16-year-old. I feel more like 18, 19, you know? Like, I feel like an adult. I feel like I look at the world through an adult's eyes. I no longer am like, oh, I'm a kid just trying to figure it out. Fucking there's shit up my back and my diaper. Like, I really am like, I can do this. I appreciate this a slow way of living. I don't really drink anymore at all. And honestly, edibles also kind of freak me out at this point. I do love an edible. Don't get me wrong. I love an edible. But I am convinced that it's giving me memory loss. And maybe I've talked about that before. So, and I got to a point where I talked to my doctor about it. I was like, am I going to have dementia at 29? And he was like, no. But also, sometimes THC does that to people. Like, it's just how your body interacts with it. And if you feel like it gives you memory loss, then stop. And I was like, great point, doc. Consider this. I would watch Studio Ghibli off the Eddie. So what now? Dumbass. Dumbass fucking doctor. He doesn't even know. He doesn't even fucking get it. But sometimes I want to watch Totoro! Totoro! Sometimes I need to watch My Neighbor Totoro off the 30 milligram edible, and I need to like have a bib on my chest and drool. Like, have you ever thought about that? Have you ever? I bet you as a doctor have never considered that I need to sit in front of my TV with the big screen about a foot from my face, my phone about 3 inches from my face, and I need to be drooling into my chest eating a jalapeno flavored something. And I actually need to have a salt snack, a sweet snack, and a spicy snack. And I have a sugary drink, an electrolyte, and then a water. Okay? Because doctors don't think about that. You're like, oh, eat a vegetable, drink some water, have a normal stool. You don't know what I'm doing in my home. Okay? So mind your business. Doctors need to mind their fucking business. Anyway, I was like, yeah, I think edibles give me memory loss. And he was like, then maybe stop, or maybe at least just calm down on it. And I was like, yeah, you have a good point. So I'm going to stop because I don't even need that. Like, I'll cry to My Neighbor Totoro without an edible. You know what I mean? I don't even need a stimulant or a depressant. Is a THC is a depressant? Yes? Jury? The jury's out on that one. Okay. Here's what I was going to say. I'm pushing 30. Very excited to be 30. Yes, I am still a fangirl, okay? Yes, to my core. I love things the way I love them. I love them so intensely, and I go fucking crazy for it. I mean, I'm wearing a fucking Nosferatu sweatshirt, okay? I ride for the things I love. However, this job has gotten too serious, and I am too close to these people now to be talking about these famous men the way that I used to, okay? So I need you guys to know that we're moving into a new era of Broski Nation fandom where I'm keeping it confined, lock and chain to the TikTok edits folder. Okay. Anything I love, I'll talk about it as a show or a product or a book on here. However, can't go in on the actors anymore. I can't do it. I need to preserve some semblance of dignity. And right now we're running on empty. The dignity chamber is completely empty almost, okay? Running on fumes there. So there are a few actors that, yeah, they're the subject of the munch that I'm a munch for, okay? There are a few actors that I would munch, and I don't feel empowered to say their names here. They're staying in the TikTok edits folder on TikTok, okay? So just please leave me in this time. Leave me alone right now. That's kind of all I can say at this moment is that there are better things we could be talking about on here that don't degrade my dignity and, you know, that preserve something for me. So that's a new era that we're entering into now. So I just wanted to kind of give everyone that update. But at the same time, it's time, okay? I'm almost 30. There are so many different things we could be talking about on here. Things that I enjoy. I do enjoy talking about, you know, my celebrity crushes, but let's kill it. Let's kill it, dude. I would much rather talk about all the old media that I'm working through. And speaking of that, let's have a little mini book club right now because I talked about it a bit last week.
And I haven't read any more since last week, to be honest, because I've been – we had a crazy royal court shoot week. I've filmed every single day this week, sometimes multiple times a day. And on top of that, we were filming other stuff. So – oh, new YouTube videos coming, by the way. That's what we were filming. And yeah, I haven't had much time to read, but I did want to talk about – Lord of the Flies a bit more because, oh, and that's what I wanted to Google. I wanted to Google high school assigned reading. Because this is my goal for the rest of this year. I have a huge, massive TBR on Goodreads, meaning to be read, of course. And I want to power through classics before I'm like, you know, obviously I'll throw some in. I've had The Knight and the Moth, A Knight and a Moth. Do you know that book? A Knight and a Moth. The Knight and the Moth by Rachel Gillig. She wrote the One Dark Window, didn't she? I love that book. Rachel Gillig. I'll look that up in a second. A gothic romantasy novel and the first book in the Stonewater Kingdom series. It follows a young prophetess named Sybil, known as Six, who must team up with the heretical knight, Roderick, to find her fellow prophetesses after they mysteriously disappear, venturing into a dangerous world outside her cathedral home. See? Hold on. I'm like, fuck all the bullshit I just said. I need to tap into this. The story features a unique magic system, a slow-burn romance, and a dark atmospheric world with creatures, folklore, blending fantasy, mystery, and romance. Now, hold on a damn minute. Hold on a damn minute. Gothic romantasy. If you haven't read, I'm pretty sure Rachel Gillig did, oh my God, and there's a sequel, The Knave and the Moon. Yeah, let me lock into that. She did, yep, One Dark Window and Two Twisted Crowns, which is a duology, which I fucking loved. I loved. I gave One Dark Window, I think, like 4.5, and then Two Twisted Crowns was good. I think I gave it a 3, 3.5. It just wasn't as exhilarating as the first one, but I really like her writing, and she is very unique and original in her concepts and her storytelling and her magic systems. Oh my God, the magic system was so fucking cool in those books. So I honestly just convinced myself to read, oh my God, wait, The Knight and the Moth. Talking gargoyle figurine. What the hell is that? The Knight and the Moth came out last year. The Knave and the Moon came out this year. Or is it about to come out? Whoa! September 1st, 2026 is when it's supposed to come out. Okay, so like I was saying, it's been my mission to kind of power through these, the high school curriculum that I missed, or honestly just rereading a bunch of the shit from the high school curriculum, because we had to read things like Great Gatsby and 1984 and The Raven and what else did we read? We read Heart of Darkness. We read Brave New World. We read, honestly, the assigned reading in my high school was out of this world. It was stellar because I went to two different high schools. And the first one, I was freshman, sophomore, and so we did the basic things like Shakespeare, and which I, you know, at the time I really did not enjoy. But I feel like if I went back and read Shakespeare now, where I am in my life, I would love it for what it is, right? Like, I would be a Shakespeare head. I just need to, like, get my head out of my ass. And honestly, like, that takes such a long time to get into, and you need the historical context, and I would want a study guide. Like, I would fully throw myself at it like an assignment in school, but I just don't have that in me right now. And to be honest, what's the one that I did like that recently? Well, I annotated the fuck out of The Monk, but I'm more so interested in these ones like, you know, Picture of Dorian Gray and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and these gothic madness adjacent kind of surrealist, kind of dystopian, kind of not books that deal with things like the ego and goodness versus evil in people and vanity and where is the line between human and monster. You know, I really love all that shit. It is my mission for this year to power through a classic high school curriculum, things like Catch-22 and Catcher in the Rye. I have never read those books, and I would like to be in on the club, and I would like to be aware of them. However, it's been a while since I read a romantasy. It's been a while since I've jerked it, all right?
since I've literarily jerked it, literally, logically speaking. So it might be time to, you know, kind of dive back into that. Also, if this book, I don't know if this is supposed to be like an adult fiction versus like if One Dark Window was kind of YA. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've read a romanticy. I'll be completely honest. Probably the last one I read was, what's that one where the sequel just came out? The Brimstone, Quicksilver. I think Quicksilver was the last romanticy I read. And me and Drew were talking about it. And that was probably like almost 2 years ago. So I just convinced myself to read this, The Knight and the Moth, because it's by an author that I really enjoy. And that's why I picked it up. Honestly, I wish on Goodreads you could organize your TBR into like, it's this kind of book, here's this kind of book. Because I have a bunch of like political books I want to read too. But it's just about organizing my thoughts and about like, am I at a time in my life where I can give it the dedication it deserves, where I can note, I can take notes on it. You know, I can be an involved active reader if I'm not too busy. And also if I'm in a strange mental state, absorbing heavy literature sometimes for me is not the best because it can worsen my condition, so to speak. So I have to trade off. And I created this to-read list like 4 months ago where I was like, here's the order. And it was going to be shit like Great Gatsby, Slaughterhouse-Five, East of Eden, Stoner, Grapes of Wrath, Count of Monte Cristo. Like, it was all these books. And they were just really heavy, like dark, heavy books about the soul and the soul's journey and like corruption and darkness and like America, you know, a lot of Steinbeck books are about the American West and about what it means to have an American identity and relationships between a father and a son. And it can be a lot if you're not ready for it. And I'm not ready for it. I guess I kind of established. Probably I'm going to read Knight and the Moth. Then I'm going to do Great Gatsby. Well, I have like 60 pages left in Lord of the Flies. And Lord of the Flies, I talked about it last week. If you want to hear me talk about it, go to the last episode because I don't really have anything new to say. Because it's mainly about, you know, what is a society without rules if you have to reestablish it? And you know what comes to mind? The Sam Fender song called Start Again. If we had to wipe everything, start society over from the beginning, would we make the same mistakes? And my gut says yes, because human nature is flawed and we are doomed to repeat the sins of the past because we do not learn. Because we don't learn. I think there is and this is a slippery slope of a conversation, you know, when you start talking about philosophy and politics and whatever, free will. And it's also such a source of inspiration for a lot of books of is free will and giving too much freedom and a catalyst for the downfall of, you know, that gives way to ego and it gives way to entitlement and it gives way to power dynamics, right? Someone establishing themselves over another group of people and then that blows up and continues and the ripples continue out. But at the same time, an oppressive society with very limited free will, something like 1984 or like Fahrenheit 451, those books offer a different hell, you know? So if these are the two ends of the spectrum, if we're talking about fictional examples of a society with no rules and a society with too many rules, how do we exist somewhere within the gray where everyone is safe and happy? And is that possible? And is that the point of life is to struggle towards that impossibility because maybe it is possible? All these things really, really interest me and honestly, it disturbs me on a level when you see, when you read a book like Fahrenheit 451 or, you know, any of these dystopian surrealist societies where information becomes a punishable offense. When, because, right, and this makes me sound like a conspiracy theorist. However, we're living in a fucking fascist police state, so it's really not a conspiracy theory. we're living through it right now, of the American government has a history of censoring things, mind you, but we're watching it happen in real time. Books like that fascinate me because who is the brave one? Who is the character? What are the characteristics of the protagonist that they get pushed to their limit where they say, whatever the punishment is, it is worth it to have that knowledge. And after I read Fahrenheit 451, I genuinely was like, I take reading for granted so much. We take public libraries for granted. We take things like access to the World Wide Web for granted. These things that connect us and inform us and misinform us, okay? Worth pointing that out. That the quest for knowledge, you know, if you've been watching this podcast for long enough, you know that that kind of is one of my major points of life. To me, truly, I think that one of the points of life is to learn and never stop learning and to let that knowledge pave the way for an empathetic, enlightened approach to how we interact with each other and the world, the natural world around us. You know, like, knowledge is the point. And so when you take that and you flip it on its head and you make it horror, or you make it a point of, you know, imagine a world where that's criminalized, which in a lot of areas of the world, it is criminalized. You know, things are redacted every day from government documents and then made public. And it's like, you fuckers. It also ties back into this idea of like, how much information is too much information? It is a dark and depressed and twisted and corrupt and disturbed, perverted world we live in, with literal pedophiles running governments. And how do you, first of all, make sense of that? I don't know if you ever can. And second of all, how do you do something about it? And third of all, how did it get to this point? Books that explore that, of course, for me, in a kind of satirical, fictional sense, really piques my interest. It really piques my interest of the limits and the spectrum of human nature. We're very interesting creatures. Oh my God, did y'all see what that astronaut said from space, where he was like, it is so dark and empty up here. Anything worth having and anything and anyone you've ever cared about is like anything that's ever been worth doing or knowing or caring about or experiencing or loving is here. It's here. We're here. And we take it for granted every single day. This is what we've chosen to do with the gift that is life. This is what we've chosen to do. And this is how we treat each other. We chose cruelty. A coward's choice. Cruelty is such a coward's choice. That's the mark of a stupid person as well. You chose cruelty? That's so lazy, right? You picked the easy way out. Do you know how easy it is to be cruel and mean and lazy? Damn. Anyway, that video of the astronaut speaking from the spaceship made me cry, obviously, because I was like, say that, King. Preach that. People need to hear that. But at the same time, that message will not reach the people that it should reach. And honestly, it's a bunch of fucking pedophilic sociopaths running the planet. So don't even know if the message will reach them ever in a way that is connective. So yay. All that to say, I'm going to read The Night and the Moth, because this episode is sponsored by Shopify. When I first started this podcast 3 years ago, I was staring up at the metaphorical mountain. Y'all get me? So many decisions to make, gear to buy, figure out how to use, set up, filming schedule, logos, trademarks. It was all very overwhelming, and every day seemed to introduce a new decision that needed an immediate answer. When you're starting off with something new, it seems like your to-do list keeps growing every day with new tasks, and that list can easily begin to overrun your life. Finding the right tool that not only helps you out, but simplifies everything can be such a game changer. For millions of businesses, that tool is Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Tackle all those important tasks in one place, from inventory to payments to analytics and more. No need to save multiple websites or try to figure out what platform is hosting the tool that you need. Everything is all in one place, making your life easier and your business operations smoother. Get started with your own design studio. With hundreds of ready-to-use templates, Shopify helps you build a beautiful online store that matches your brand's style. Get the word out like you have a marketing team behind you. Easily create email and social media campaigns wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling. And best yet, Shopify is your commerce expert with world-class expertise in everything from managing inventory to international shipping to processing returns and beyond. Start your business today with the industry's best business partner, Shopify, and start hearing. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/broski. Go to shopify.com/broski. That's shopify.com/broski. This episode is sponsored by Liquid IV. Y'all know I do ACL every single year with my bestie Tato. ACL is the festival in Austin, Texas. And my God, does it get scorching in that Texas heat. Having that much fun really wears me down. Sun-drenched memories require superior hydration. Liquid IV delivers longer-lasting hydration than water alone. And right now, you can get 20% off your first order with code BROSKI at checkout. I keep these packets with me in basically every bag, my carry-on for the flight, my festival bag, and just my daily purse. I also keep extra for my friends if they start feeling run down, and I personally love the mandarin orange flavor. It feels like a sweet treat. I know Broski Nation soldiers are always running around experiencing the beauty and joy of life, or at least I encourage you to, and y'all better listen. And Liquid IV is a great hydration hack to keep with you on all your adventures. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water hydrates faster than water alone. Powered by Liquid IV HydraScience, an optimized ratio of electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients that turn ordinary water into extraordinary hydration. Compared to water, Liquid IV delivers longer-lasting hydration and retains hydration for up to 4 hours. Liquid IV's science-backed formula contains an optimized ratio of electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients. Liquid IV is backed by a scientific advisory board with world-renowned researchers to conduct clinical research and trials. 8 essential vitamins and nutrients, always non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, soy-free. Explore the delicious sugar-free options like mandarin orange, rainbow sherbet, that one's pretty good, mango pineapple, and more. Soak up unforgettable memories with on-the-go hydration from Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first purchase with code BROSKI at checkout. That's 20% off your first purchase with code BROSKI at liquidiv.com. It might be time to get back into romanticy a little bit. My meter, I guess, for romanticy is very high because now that I've been reading so many other books, that I love. I mean, I read shit like The Yellow Wallpaper and all these kind of gothic horror is just my standard now. So something, it needs to be as impressive and entertaining and as hooky as gothic horror. That's why I'm excited about this, because I realized that's why I bought it. It was gothic. It's been on my shelf since last year, because I saw it at Barnes & Noble and I was like, so yeah, I'm gonna freaking read that. Let's do some Googling, guys. History of carousels. You know what time it is. Wikipedia hour. It's Wikipedia hour. A carousel, merry-go-round, or galloper. The British English is always so whimsical and fun, and I do appreciate that. A galloper. I actually love that. Is a type of amusement ride consisting of a rotating circular platform with seats for riders. The seats are traditionally in the forms of rows of animal figures, obviously horses usually, mounted on posts, many of which move up and down to simulate galloping. Oh my God, when did carousels drop? Devices like these became popular among commoners by the early 18th century, and carousels were being built and operated at various fairs and gatherings in Central Europe. If I would have been, like, when they made carousels actually, you know, electrical or whatever, if I would have been a Victorian kid and like mommy and daddy would have taken me to the carousel in the park, oh my God, I would have been obsessed. My special interest would have been carousels. That shit would have been absolutely magical to me. Like, if horses scare you, also carousels are so pretty. They're always decorated really nice. They're painted really well. It was gold. It was, there were lights on it. It was huge. And the animals are going up and down. Oh my God. And as a kid, as a normal kid back in like, what, 2004, I used to be like, the carousels with all the different animals on them, I would always beeline to the dolphin. I would always go to the ones that kind of looked a little dangerous, you know, like the ones that were super high up. Cause I was like, I'm going to be brave. And then I'd be scared and I couldn't wait for the ride to be over because that's just, that's who I am. I really feel like I would have shit myself if I would have been a Victorian child and I would have seen a beautiful carousel. I would have loaded my diaper and then sat up on the horse and been like, get me down, get me down, get me down, get me down. And they would have had to stop the ride because I would have been scared. You know what else scared me as a kid, kind of in that vein, is, you know, those rides at amusement parks that are the big ships and they go up all the way to the point where you're almost fucking upside down and all you have is a lap bar. All you have is a lap bar. I peed. I'm going to pee. And the horror stories from like Six Flags and shit where they have that ride and then someone vomits. And then it goes on the other side of the Viking ship. Whatever. Six Flags is something that I think every European or any non-American person should experience because that is America. Six Flags is America. Anyone who's like, oh, what's American culture? They don't have culture. Go to Six Flags. Because you could say, oh, go to Disney. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's capitalist consumerist culture. Six Flags is that, but on a degree that is just like, no regard for human safety, no regard for, you know, having food that's edible. They say there's enough microplastics in our bodies at this point to create a plastic fork. Hey, that's from one trip to Six Flags. The merchandise is all like, what is it? It's like Looney Tunes and Batman and whatever. It's like the shit you weren't allowed to watch as a kid, which makes it fun. The rides are borderline unrideable. They are so COVID originated at Six Flags. Like, the rides are so dirty that there is a charm to it. And they're so thrilling that it's amazing. So, if you're coming to America for the first time, go to Six Flags. Go see what it's all about. That's what our country's built on. And honestly, Six Flags over America, or no, it's called Six Flags over Texas because six different flags have owned Texas at some point. That's where that comes from. Let's look it up. Let me see if I can name them, actually. This is going to be this is a test. Mexico, Spain. No, Spain never owned Texas. Mexico, United States, Spain, France. Who would we buy the Louisiana Purchase from? Was Texas part of the Louisiana Purchase? I'm going to say France. All right, that's four. Let's see. Tormenta Rampaging Run, new in 2026. Yeah, I have to go. Whoa. There's a California's Great America, Canada's Wonderland, Carowinds in North Carolina, Dorney Park in Pennsylvania, Cedar Point, Ohio. I didn't know these were all connected to Six Flags. Castaway Bay in Ohio, Oklahoma City, Frontier City. I've been to Frontier City. It's fun. Hurricane Harbor in San Francisco. Damn, there's a lot of hurricane harbors. Knott's Berry Farm in California is owned by Six Flags. I didn't know Schlitterbahn, Galveston, and New Braunfels is owned by Six Flags. Six Flags Darien Lake Hotel in New York. Damn. What are the Six Flags over Texas? Spain, France, Mexico. Oh, I always forget the Republic of Texas. Oh, that's a fucking, I never would have got that. Here are the Six Flags over Texas. Spain, France, Mexico, the Republic of Texas, the Confederate States of America, boo! And the United States of America. These nations represent over 500 years of history with their flags serving as the basis for the theme park's name and original. I wonder if they take down the Confederate flag. That is insane if they're flying the Confederate flag. Okay, it's not the Confederate flag. but it is the flag of the Confederate States of America. That's crazy. Okay. Wait, this is also kind of tea. They're using the flags from those periods. Very, very interesting to me. Okay, anyway, carousels. Let's talk about carousels. The history. Let's talk about it. So they used to be called carousels, which is the French, it's a French word for little battle. They were equestrian royal tournaments in 17th century Europe. The most famous carousel of this kind was held by Louis the 14th, XIV 14, in June 1662. One of the skills tested performed during these events was a ring jousting, which is where there's a ring and you have a lance and you ride full gallop and you try to do that. Okay. Medieval times, if you've been, you're familiar. Oh my God. These early carousels had no platforms. The animals would hang from chains and fly out from the centrifugal force. Is it centrifugal? Centrifugal.
Centrifugal.
Centrifugal. Moving or tending to move away from a center. So they would be, it would be like those other rides at the amusement parks where they're suspended. You're in the little like seats and then it takes off and it spins. And then you're like literally out here. Like it's spinning. Those, I can't do those things. They actually scare me to fucking death. There is nothing to hold on to. It scares the shit out of me. I can't do it at Disney. They were often powered by animals walking in a circle or people pulling a rope or cranking. By the mid-19th century, the platform carousel was developed. Rideable animal figures and chariots were fixed to a circular floor that would rotate around a central pole. These carousels were called dobbies and were operated manually by the operator or by ponies. Carousels in the United Kingdom, where they are also known as gallopers, usually turn clockwise, while those in North America and mainland Europe typically turn counterclockwise. Why has Britain got to be different? Britain's got to be different at everything. Why do you guys have to do that? In 1803, John Joseph Merlin had a carousel in his mechanical museum in London where gentry and nobility liked to gather on winter evenings. The horses floated free over a pole. It was connected to a big musical instrument that played a fully orchestrated concerto. That's cool. And from the first note, the carousel would start turning while each horse would make a galloping movement with a visitor riding on its back. Merlin did not patent his inventions, and engineers were allowed to come to create their own models of his creations. By the mid-19th century, the carousel became a popular fixture at English fairs. The first steam-powered mechanical roundabout, invented by Thomas Bradshaw, appeared at the Pop Market Fair in Bolton in 1861. Cool. The first ever one in the U.S. was opened in the 1840s in Ohio, Hessville, Ohio. The American carousel industry was developed by European immigrants, notably Danish immigrant Charles I.D. Loof, German immigrant Gustav Denzel, and Scottish immigrant Alan Herschel. During the late 19th century, oh, these are beautiful, several carousel construction centers formed in the U.S., each with their own style. The Coney Island style, characterized by elaborate and sometimes faux jeweled saddles, as well as mirrors to catch and reflect lights. This style was pioneered by Loof in Brooklyn, New York City. This is the Coney Island style. That is fucking beautiful. And I'm really rocking with this. And you know what I appreciate? They painted the horse's legs and head to have, it's like ombre, and it looks like a real horse. It's awesome. Then the Philadelphia style, known for more realistically painted saddles. This style was pioneered in Philadelphia. That's kind of beautiful. It's not as ostentatious as the other one, and the horse is attached to the ground. See, look, this one has an ostrich in the background. I like the ones with different animals on it. Okay, I like this. And then country fair style, often with no saddles at all. This style was pioneered by Alan Herschel and Edward Spillman in New York near Buffalo and Kansas. Interesting. Yeah, I don't really love this one. The horse is very beautiful, but oh, and they put real hair on it. On the well, I guess there's real hair on all of them. Very interesting. During the Great Depression, the production of wooden carousel figures was phased out and was replaced by more durable, mass-produced aluminum castings. They were in turn discontinued in favor of cheaper and lighter fiberglass castings later in the 20th century. The golden age of carousels was from the 1870s to the early 1930s. Less than 200 complete units exist today. Whoa. Mechanical band organs that provided music and brass ring dispensers that encouraged riders to sit on the outermost row were common features for carousels during their golden age, but now are very rare.
These are so sick. This one's in like a arboretum, not that, like a glass, what are those called? Like a glass greenhouse. This one's in the Netherlands. Oh, it's beautiful. Look at the top. Oh my God. And the carriages. God, we just don't do it like this anymore. The United States ones look American. It's so crazy. Like these look colonial. They're a bit more subdued. They're very white. It's giving like Kentucky Derby. And the horses, they just don't hit as hard. Here's one in Canada from 1885. Beautiful. I wonder if these are still up. Ooh, this is pretty. This one's in America. This is in the Cradle of Aviation Museum, Garden City, New York. Manufactured in 1912.
And the horses have little flowers on them. They're pretty sweet.
I need to ride a carousel now. Whoa! There's one at California's Great America, which is an amusement park that was built in 1976. It is a double-decker carousel. It's the tallest carousel in the world at 101 feet. The nearly identical Columbia carousel in Six Flags Great America in Illinois is 1 foot shorter. Damn. Okay, very interesting. The violent medieval history behind the carousel ride. It's just about kind of jousting with the rings, the lance rings. Has anyone died on a carousel? Oh, Jesus. There's a Griffith Park carousel. Griffith Park carousel.
Ooh.
Oh, my God. I have to go. Griffith Park merry-go-round. It has a temporarily closed. Oh, my God. We're closed for repair until further notice. When was this? 2022! Oh my God, are you for real? Work on some important repairs to our historic 1926 Spillman Engineering County Carousel. Engineering Company Carousel, my fault. We want to preserve this beautiful and valuable machine for generations to come. And for now, this means closing. With a machine this old, these special jobs take a lot of time. All the comments are like, please open. Thank you for taking care of it. Please open it. Can you guys let me know if you're done? I have to ride a carousel. Wow. We take little things like that for granted. You know what I mean? The carousel was the shit back then. The escalator. The escalator dropped at the, I believe it was the Paris World's Fair, like turn of the century. People waited in line for hours to get on the escalator because it was like a modern marvel. Also, it didn't have stairs. I watched this whole fucking video on the history of escalators. And I wasn't even high, bitch. I love this shit. The history of escalators is crazy. So many different design attempts were made before they settled on, you know, there's little grooves that it fits into because skirts and pants and children's fingers were being caught in the escalator. So they had to make the little grooves and then those little brushes on the side are so things don't get caught in it. I used to think it was a boot cleaner. It's not. When the escalator goes up and you know how it goes straight and then there's that little groove that it goes into, it's so shit doesn't get caught in it. It's honestly genius. And then it goes and it goes under the machine on this conveyor belt thing. And then it comes back up. It's amazing. It didn't used to be like that. It used to be a flat surface and your ankles would be like this. And it was kind of painful to ride, but it was so neat that something mechanical was lifting you up and you didn't have to walk. So it was really, really neat. And then I don't know when the elevator dropped, but the escalator was really fucking cool. And at this World's Fair, it was, again, a flat surface, but it was at like a 45 degree angle and it would take you up to the top and then you'd have to get off. So you'd take stairs down and people would do it over and over and over. It's really neat. Shit like that's awesome. We take so many things for granted nowadays. Anyway. Well, guys,
let me know if there's anything from the back that I can try and source for you. But unfortunately, we are out of a lot. So go ahead and send me any comments or any requests on items that I can try to source that we can keep in store for you if you're looking to come by. But really, at this point in time, you know, you got to get it. Check our Facebook page for when new items are acquired and they are in store. Once it's gone, it's gone. All right, guys. Once it's gone, it's gone forever. We will be having our annual steampunk convention soon. Any waistcoats you might be wanting, any glasses, any walking sticks, top hats, you know, kind of like steampunk-esque things. We really, we keep it in the back in the steampunk room, but those will be brought out to the main lobby on display for summer 2026. So, you know, also, by the way, let me break character for a second. You know that book, Six of Crows, and they made the damn, that TV show, Ravens and, fuck, what's it called? Six of Crows TV show. Shadow and Bone? Bro. Can I be completely transparent with you for a second? I got paid to promote this show back in 2021, and I had to watch it before I talked about it. I became addicted. I'm not even like, girl, the brand deal's done, money, whatever. I loved this damn show, and it made me want to read the book, because there's a character that you bitches have been screaming at me for literally years. Kaz Brecker. Is that his name? Kaz Brecker. Dude. Yeah. And who's the actor that plays him, dude? Freddie Carter. Yeah. Yeah. I'm liking Freddie Carter in that show. I really liked him. He's got scary eyebrows. You know, he's an eyebrow actor, similar to Will Poulter. So I need to read this. If I'm going to do Night in the Moth, I might as well just read fucking Six of Crows, because that's an iconic, I think it's YA, but it's an iconic series. And I just convinced myself, because it's kind of steampunk, isn't it? Isn't it? Six of Crows. Leigh Bardugo. She wrote that other book that I did not like, actually. Ninth House. I did not like Ninth House, y'all. I read Ninth House because I thought it was going to be a book hangover cure for secret history when I was way back when, in like 2022, when I was on that kick of Dark Academia, which of course I love Dark Academia, but this was kind of, it was a miss for me, Ninth House. It really felt like trauma porn with no payoff. She has a really dark history that she spares no detail in telling you about. For what? Like, there's no reason. And that really took me out of it. Like, to the point where it overshadowed the plot. I can't even remember the main points of the plot. I know that it's like secret societies at this college, and like, it had all the makings to be a really great Dark Academia fantasy, and it just missed the mark for me. So knowing that, I think Ninth House was her attempt at like adult fiction or college fiction, I'll give Six of Crows a try. Because Six of Crows, oh shit, Six of Crows is this related to Shadow and Bone, or is Shadow and Bone the first one? The book follows criminal prodigy Kaz Brecker and his crew, a spy, a sharpshooter, a runaway, a heartrender, and a thief, as they attempt the job for immense wealth, exploring themes of found family, revenge, and survival. It's the first book in a duology, followed by Crooked Kingdom, and is part of a larger universe that includes the Shadow and Bone trilogy. Okay, got it. It's a heist book? Okay, T, it's set in the same world as the Shadow and Bone trilogy, but prior knowledge of that series is not required to understand Six of Crows. Okay. Which one's more highly rated? Six of Crows, Goodreads. 4.45? It's got a cult following, okay? That's why I definitely need to read it. It's got 1.1 million ratings. Six of Crows and what's the other one? Ninth House. Let's see what Ninth House got. See if you guys are lying. Ninth House got 4 stars? What was the other one? Shadow and Bone. Shadow and Bone has 3.9. Okay. I have my marching orders. You guys have yours. The Steampunk Emporium Bazinga Blowout Sale Extravaganza is happening this summer at the Broski Emporium and Apothecary. Please come check us out, guys. Seriously. Let me put my beard back on. All right. I appreciate you guys tuning in. And I'll see you on the next one. Thank you so much for learning about the history of carousels with me, doing a mini book club, and checking out the shop. So love you guys. And I'll see you on the next one. See you, boys.